And we are back. We have briefly, well, would you like to say what happened on our
brief
pause?
We had a bug pause where we let out both what looked like a beetle and a big fly. So hopefully there's less buzzing noises.
Do you have a place you would like to jump back into? Or to pick up from?
I completely forgot what we were talking about, so.
One thing that had come up was stigma and middle school.
Oh, yes. Yes. Can you say a little more so I remember?
Yeah. Would you... I mean, is that a time that you would like to share a bit more about?
I don't think so for right now. I think maybe focusing on my more recent life would be better.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, let's see. Well, I think a big part of my life that we haven't talked about yet is my poetry. I got into poetry about 3 years ago. I took an ekphrastic poetry class, which is poems about art, with Tracy K. Smith, who was the U.S. Poet Laureate. She's so cool. Shout out Tracy K. Smith. Oh no, sorry. Shout out Tracy K. Smith. She's amazing. Shout out Raphael Allison, who is her husband and also my advisor. I took her class and I learned that you can say things without having to say all of it, and you can give feelings without having to spell it out for people, and people can feel different things about the same thing. And I love the fluidity of it. And yeah, I've been writing poetry more recently over the past year and a half. I've kind of committed to it. I will be going to Warren Wilson, which is in North Carolina, for my master's in fine arts in poetry. And I'm currently writing a chapbook on poetry, which is like due in a couple days. But can I explain what it's about? Yeah, so it's a story of two goddesses who descend to the earth, and specifically El Salvador, during the Salvadoran Civil War in the 80s. And they descend as Piul Piul, which is an indigenous group in El Salvador, and they have to reconcile with religiosity and choice and all these questions. And at the end, they decide that they need to leave El Salvador, and they start migrating north to the United States. And that's all I'll say about that, but maybe someone will read it. I don't know. It's called Chasing Salvation. Will be out soonish, probably next year. So I write a lot about queer narratives, Latino history. I'm currently trying to write about trans identity. I think that's something I haven't opened up about a lot, but something I've been thinking about since high school. And so I actually came out to my partner, Jason, and a few strangers that I'm gender fluid. And that felt really good. It felt really great. And I'm not open about it to everyone. But I don't anticipate my family listening to this, so I think we'll be okay. And if they do, they do. But yeah, it was just, I'm starting to write about that, and just like what it means to like feel like you're everything and nothing at the same time, and how I connected with someone named Monica like a week or two ago, and they're gender fluid, and we talked about how like we feel like our insides are just light and sparkles and just fun feelings and colors, and like that's how it feels. It's like I just feel like a person. I don't necessarily feel like I have to subscribe to gender roles or gender identity, really. Like, I'm just a person, and that's okay. So I've really started to write about that, which has been hard, but definitely fun and scary and sad at the same time. But yeah, I definitely, I'm working on my first...
Pausing for a little bit of wind sound that's rumbling the microphone.
Gotcha. All right. I'm working on my first book. No title yet. But it will be a choose-your-own-adventure poetry book, which I haven't seen before, but perhaps exists. And it will be about migrant crossers and borders along different times. So you can choose if you want to migrate to the United States in the 17th century or the 19th century or present day. I'm very excited about this project because I love being a historian and actually like going into the archive and seeing what things could have been possible during this time. It's really fun. So that's that. Oh, and a little more about my poetry. I teach poetry at South Bay Jail in Boston. That has been an amazing experience. I've never had students so eager to learn, and I love it. Just like, I had the most amazing students, and they all put their heart out and let me read it, and I think that was so beautiful. And so I'm excited to teach more people in the future.
How did you come to teach there?
So I used to work at Porter Square Books, this bookstore, and we have a prison book donation thing that, you know, you can donate books to the jail. And I heard about it and I was like, how do I get involved in the jail? The reason I felt comfortable asking this is because I did a program while at my time at Harvard where I, with Nashua Street County Jail, us and their students who were incarcerated folks, but they had like a school inside the jail. We learned about the war on drugs together and we learned about their experiences. Most people who self-selected to be part of this program had experiences with drugs in their community or anything like that, and so it was a beautiful experience. And so having that, I wanted to have another one, and so I asked, can I work at the jail? And then I talked to the jail librarian and they didn't really ask me for my credentials, which was interesting. I think saying that I go to Harvard was credential enough, but to me that is not enough. But It's been a great experience, and I'm really sad to be moving and leaving my students, but also, luckily, they leave me too, and I'm very happy about that. But I hope to do something similar in Illinois. I also hope to expand to detention centers. That's something that really interests me. But I do find different ethical questions about that, like whether, like, you know, like, is the detention center filled with illness and no food and things like that? I don't know if the resources should be directed towards a class versus getting people their basic needs. But I also understand that, like, a class like this can really help the emotional and mental side of things, so it really depends. But I'll see what I can do. And I'm really inspired by my former professor, Valeria Luiselli, who taught writing at detention centers to children. And I want to follow in her footsteps, so shout out. Yeah, so I definitely would say teaching is a big part of my life. I would say I've been a teacher since middle school. I will go back to middle school, actually. At first I started as a student, and I was a student leader with, so to back up, my middle school was half gifted and talented program, half people with disabilities program. And I didn't know I had autism at the time, but I really connected with a lot of the disabled students, and we can guess why. But yeah, I like became friends with a lot of them. And then there was this camp that set up every summer at the middle school for children and adults with disabilities, particularly cerebral palsy, but also other disabilities. We had deaf individuals, we had mute individuals, individuals with intellectual disabilities, we had everything. And I became a camp counselor, and after a couple years, I started teaching the camp counselors how to interact with disabled individuals. I taught them how to feed people with more severe disabilities and how to communicate. We had like these like buttons that, depending on the level of movement that the person would make, you know, they'd click it and it'd mean certain things. We had a, it was a really great experience, and I think I love teaching, so I'm rambling, but like, yeah, that's that.
Have you had particular experience or a particular experience with teaching that you hold with you?
Just thinking. Sorry for the silence.
Silence is allowed here.
Teaching. Yeah, in college, I was part of this organization called Partners in Health Engage. I used to be in the global health field, and I was teaching other students how to write letters to the editors, which are just these short, like, couple paragraph letters that you hope to get published in local newspapers or national, that kind of talk about what your representative, your, you know, member of Congress is doing in regards to a certain bill or resolution, and you basically call them out. You call them out for not doing the right thing or for not doing what we believe is the right thing. And so I had this student who's now one of my best friends. His name's Evan. And he was already a gifted writer. Like, wow. He's probably one of the most amazing writers I've ever met. And he doesn't believe me when I tell him, but it's true. And yeah, I explained how you write it. And I think the thing I learned is that when you meet a gifted student, it's important to give them space so that they can grow at the speed they want to grow at. And so I was just like, I think you get it, like, I'm gonna let you do it. And I think the reason that this came to mind for me specifically is because of two things. I think one, when we think about teaching, I think a lot of times, like, people think about, like, you know, a student that had a lot of issues or a student that needed help or something, and then you feel like this great person because you help them out and now they're succeeding. But I wanted to share a different kind of story where it's that as a teacher, you learn to step back and let people who got it and know what they're doing, you give them the space to really excel and just do things you didn't even think about. And so I wanted to share that because I think it's important to have those stories too. And that it is a skill to know when to step back. It is not easy. But yeah, and Evan's the best. He's one of my best friends. I just saw him a couple days ago. We're both going through post-grad identity crises. But I know he's going to do so well. He's going to succeed. So shout out Evan. Oh, and the other reason I brought up this moment, I think it's because a lot of times, you know, the student-teacher relationship, can get tricky. And I think I'm talking about, you know, adult student teacher relationships, not with children, but with adults. I think, like, sometimes you can really become best friends with your, like, advisors or mentors, and I think it's a beautiful thing. So I wanted to bring that into the room with us.
And we have about 15 more minutes. I wanted to ask if there's anything that you want to make sure you get a chance to talk about that we haven't gotten to yet.
I don't think so. I think one thing I'll say is I'm very proud of myself because I thought that this interview was going to be me trauma dumping, and I'm really glad I'm not doing that. I was so afraid. I was like, oh no, if they asked about my family or, like, communities, like, I'm just going to share what's made me sad recently. But I'm really happy I could find, like, these memories that mean a lot to me, and that they're, you know, just because, you know, I feel sad or I have, you know, issues with certain things doesn't mean I can't find, like, family or community. So that's what I wanted to say.
If you'd like any of that sadness to be part of the story, it is also welcome.
Yeah, I think I'm okay, unless it comes up.
Is there anything that you mentioned your post-grad identity crisis? Would you like to share about that?
Yeah, so it's interesting because I'm still in undergrad, but I've taken time off now 3 times, and so I feel like I'm post-grad, even though I have 1 semester left, which I'll be finishing up next spring. I had my identity crisis like 2 years ago when I first took time off, because it's been like my senior year for the past 2 years. So I realized that I was doing things because other people had expectations of me, specifically partners. I had many abusive, well, not many, I had 3 abusive partners over the course of 5 years, 6 years, and they were very controlling about what I should be and who I should become and my career, and my parents were also very controlling about it, and I was facing burnout, I had my mental health crisis, and I was like, I've had enough, I'm going to live life for me. And that's when I turned to writing, because I knew I wanted to be a writer since I was like a 4-year-old, but I never thought it was possible. I'm first gen American. Well, I'm first in my family to go to high school, and so it's just like, no, like, if you have this opportunity, you need to be a lawyer or doctor. And I was like, okay, I'll be a lawyer. And so I did immigration law for 3 years, and I loved it. I still love it, but I cannot work in a law office with my disabilities. It's very difficult. And so I want to incorporate the law into my poems and into my advocacy, which I still do. And yeah, I kind of lost my train of thought, but yeah. Oh, post-grad identity crisis. I think, I was like, you know, all these people have been telling me what to do, like, I need to figure it out on my own, and so I turned to writing, and I did my senior thesis on poetry, and borderlands, and mestizo consciousness, and these different things. It was very fun. I talked about liminal identity, and I can talk about that for hours, so I won't. But But it was a really fun project, and I realized that, like, I want to be both a poet and a historian. And so I'm really excited for the future. Being here at Oral History Summer School, I've already learned so much, and I'm just so excited because even 6 months ago, I was not excited for the future. I was heavily depressed, and I feel like an uplift just being here in this program and being around such cool people. Shout out everyone at Oral History Summer School. You guys are so cool. Everyone's so sweet, and just like it's showing me like what community can look like. And you know, no one has been judgmental, which I've really loved. Like, I you know, just it's been so nice, and so I really want to carry this with me, carry it into other communities I'm part of, and just bring this energy back into my post-grad-ish life.
And what are you excited for next?
I'm excited for what will be potentially an oral history project about queer and trans identities in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. I've already located an area that I will be part, like, it's a bar, and they have art nights and music and all these things, and all the queer people go, and I'm definitely going. And as I establish myself as a member of the community, then I will start asking people, hey, can I interview you? Can I do an oral history? And I'm just excited to see what the history of this new place is. Like I said before, like, I love knowing about the ancestry of my place. Like, who are the elders of the community? Like, you know, not just the people who are older, but, like, who really runs, or not runs, but like facilitates what goes on, and who can you count on, and things like that. So I'm really excited for that. I'm really excited for my life there that I'm gonna have for the next few years at least. I'm gonna continue living with my partner Jason, and we're adopting his mom's dog George, who's such a cutie. And I'm excited for a slow life. We'll be living in a house, which is very new. If you're from Boston, you know. But it's affordable. And there's a sunroom, and we're currently in a sunroom, and I can't wait to be in that sunroom. Like, I'm so excited. I'm just excited to be myself and do things that I care about and find community. Yeah.
What do you think it'll look like to find yourself?
I think it'll be hard, but really nice. I definitely have started the process of finding myself, and I like 3 days ago cut my hair really short. I had really long hair, and now it's really short, and I feel like more like myself than ever. I'm still wearing like the same clothes and stuff, but just having different hair can really change how you feel. I feel super girly and feminine, and I love it, which is surprising because I used to have long hair and that's what you associate it with, but I feel hella girly in short hair. I feel great. I was telling Jason, I was like, I feel like a Disney or Pixar like aunt, you know? And they're cute too, so like, period. But yeah, I'm excited to see like how my life unfolds, how our life with Jason unfolds, and just like us really coming into our adulthood and establishing new traditions. And I would say I'm breaking generational curses, for sure. And so I'm gonna do my best to continue doing that work because I think it's so important. Yeah. I think I like, I'll say a couple more things, which is I like mundane things. I think it's so fun when you hear, when you're like seeing people's diaries, like, you know, because I work in archives and it's like, I ate this for breakfast or I did this. So I'll say what I'm really looking forward to in my time in Illinois is having an espresso machine and making lattes in the morning. I'm excited to plant carrots and squash, and I'm excited to write about what's going on in the world. And I'm excited to take George on walks. That's really fun.
How does that feel as a place to end the oral history?
Feels great.
Thank you so much for taking the time to share your story.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a great time. Like I said, I'm really proud of myself that like I found nice memories to share. That's what I really wanted. Yeah. Take care to anyone listening.